2015 National English Competition for College Students, Level D, Preliminary. Part 1. Listening Comprehension. Section A. In this section, you will hear 5 short conversations. Each conversation will be read only once. At the end of each conversation, there will be a 20-second pause. During the pause, read the question and the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on the answer sheet with a single line through the center.
One.
May I have the day off next Friday?
Well, we're very busy then. Is it important?
Yes, it is, really. It's my cousin's wedding.
Oh, well, of course you can.
James, did you see a letter from Brazil on this desk?
Yes, it's here.
Oh, good. Where's the envelope?
I threw it away. Why?
It had some nice stamps on it. I want to get them for my brother. Three.
Hello, where's everyone?
I've got no idea, Mr. Joyce. How was your grandmother?
Oh, she was fine. I'd better go and collect my car from the police station. You know, I'd only parked on a double yellow line while I was getting her some flowers.
Four. Ah, Jackie, you're back from New York.
Yes, Fiona. I've been doing market research there.
I know. How did you get on?
Well, what I saw in the States astonished me. Really, I think there'll be a lot of demand for our new personal computers.
Five. I don't buy a newspaper every day. When I do buy one, it tends to be The Guardian. It's well written and it doesn't have a predictable political bias. It also has a crossword that is exactly the right level of difficulty for me. Which newspapers do you read?
I get The Independent every day and The Observer on Sundays. They're the only newspapers I trust.
Why do you choose them?
They don't have the obvious political affiliations. They seem relatively impartial. They have interesting sections. And The Independent has good coverage of the arts.
Section B. In this section, you will hear 2 long conversations. Each conversation will be read only once. At the end of each conversation, there will be a 1-minute pause. During the pause, read the questions and the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then, mark the corresponding letter on the answer sheet with a single line through the center.
Conversation 1.
Good morning. Take a seat.
Thank you. This is a very nice office. It must be nice working in an office like this.
Yes. Now, do you know anything about Hall International?
Yes, indeed I do. And I'm very interested in what you do.
What do we do?
The organization was set up to build hospitals in the developing world. I was reading your website, and I found that at the moment, you're building hospitals in India, Peru, and Brazil. Well, I really want to do work like that. Well, is there any travel involved?
Yes, there certainly is. We plan to send the successful candidates to places where we have building projects. Now, let's have a look at your application form. Second-class degree in civil engineering from Imperial College London. Good university, but not a very good degree.
Well, it's a very difficult course. I worked extremely hard and I'm very enthusiastic about all aspects of the subject.
Okay, I see. Conversation 2.
Hello, Feifei.
Hello, Rob.
Today we're talking about quite a controversial subject, the use of experimental drugs to treat disease.
And experimental drugs are a very hot topic with the recent cases of Ebola in West Africa.
Ebola is caused by a virus for which there is no cure yet, and the mortality rate is high.
Hundreds of people have been infected in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, and over half have died.
So the World Health Organization decided to allow the use of experimental drugs on people with the virus. The virus Ebola got its name after a river in the northern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. But when was it discovered?
Well, I'm not really sure.
Well, we'll have the answer at the end of the programme. The World Health Organization, the WHO, announced they would allow the use of these drugs on humans, but only under certain conditions.
I wonder what would happen if it didn't work, or if the patient had a bad reaction. Might they sue the doctor?
That's a very interesting point. The Health Minister of Liberia, Walter Gwenegale, has already said that people won't be allowed to sue if the drug doesn't work, or if it makes them worse.
He's very direct. Neither the government nor the doctors are liable.
And that's why, if you're infected with the virus, you have to sign a waiver.
A waiver. This is a formal document in which the person says they've given up a right or claim. In this case, the right to take others to court.
Yes, that's right.
So people who are infected with Ebola can talk to a doctor, sign this document, this waiver, and get the medicine?
Well, not exactly, because not everyone gets it. Now, let's get back to our quiz. I asked you when the Ebola virus was discovered. It was discovered in 1976. Interestingly, we don't really know which animal carries the Ebola virus, although bats have long been suspected. And this makes prevention and controlling Ebola quite difficult.
Section C. In this section, you will hear a monologue. The monologue will be read twice. After the monologue, there will be a 1-minute pause. During the pause, read the questions and the four choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then, mark the corresponding letter on the answer sheet with a single line through the center.
I'm Mark. Most students in America take part-time jobs to help to pay for their studies. I didn't plan to do this because I don't enjoy working for other people. I started my own company, CyberEdit, when I was 19. Most students have to write essays, and I aim to provide computer editing services for them. During one summer vacation, I worked for an internet company, and in the evening, I spent another 4 hours working on my website. After that summer, my company grew by about 400%, earning me $40,000 in the first year. It's not easy to develop a business. If you hope to be financially independent, you must do something while you are young and you can work long hours. For a long time, I was editing between 5 and 10 documents a night. I spent 50 hours a week doing this. It was hard. Then I hired my first 4 employees. The next year, I turned down a summer job at a big New York investment bank and spent the vacation expanding CyberEdit. In December, Wired magazine contacted me and asked me to write an article about my life. After the article appeared in March, interested investors began emailing me. In June, one of the people who had emailed me decided to invest a large sum of money in the company. So, the Wired article brought me over $1 million in funding. More than anything else, good publicity helps a new business attract investors and customers. A successful teenage entrepreneur is an interesting story. So getting publicity and funding for the business was easier because of my age. Investors came to me, not because I was making money and employing 50 people from college, but because they read about it in Wired magazine and saw it on ABC World News Tonight. My advice to young people who consider starting a company is always the same. Do it now. Don't delay starting it until you've finished school or had some real-world experience. I'm Mark. Most students in America take part-time jobs to help to pay for their studies. I didn't plan to do this because I don't enjoy working for other people. I started my own company, CyberEdit, when I was 19. Most students have to write essays, and I aim to provide computer editing services for them. During one summer vacation, I worked for an internet company, and in the evening, I spent another 4 hours working on my website. After that summer, my company grew by about 400%, earning me $40,000 in the first year. It's not easy to develop a business. If you hope to be financially independent, you must do something while you are young and you can work long hours. For a long time, I was editing between 5 and 10 documents a night. I spent 50 hours a week doing this. It was hard. Then I hired my first 4 employees. The next year, I turned down a summer job at a big New York investment bank and spent the vacation expanding CyberEdit. In December, Wired magazine contacted me and asked me to write an article about my life. After the article appeared in March, interested investors began emailing me. In June, one of the people who had emailed me decided to invest a large sum of money in the company. So, the Wired article brought me over $1 million in funding. More than anything else, good publicity helps a new business attract investors and customers. A successful teenage entrepreneur is an interesting story. So getting publicity and funding for the business was easier because of my age. Investors came to me, not because I was making money and employing 50 people from college, but because they read about it in Wired magazine and saw it on ABC World News Tonight. My advice to young people who consider starting a company is always the same. Do it now. Don't delay starting it until you've finished school or had some real-world experience.
Section D. In this section, you will hear a short passage. There are 10 missing words or phrases. Fill in the blanks with the exact words or phrases you hear. The passage will be read twice. Remember to write the answers on the answer sheet. The word or phrase that you use to open your email account may provide a key to your personality as well as to your correspondence, according to a British psychologist. Helen Petrie, professor of human-computer interaction at City University in London, analyzed the responses of 1,200 Britons who participated in a survey funded by CentralNIC, an internet domain name company. The results were published on CentralNIC's website. Petrie identifies three main password genres. Family-oriented respondents numbered nearly half of those surveyed. These people use their own name or nickname, the name of a child or partner, or a birth date as their password. They tend to be occasional computer users and have strong family ties. They chose passwords that symbolize people or events with emotional value, says Petrie. One-third of respondents were fans, using the names of athletes, singers, movie stars, or sports teams. Petrie says fans are young and want to ally themselves with the lifestyle represented by a celebrity. Two of the most popular names were Madonna and Homer Simpson. The third main group of participants are cryptics, because they pick unintelligible passwords or a random string of letters, numerals, and symbols. Petrie says cryptics are the most security-conscious group. They tend to make the safest but least interesting choices. Passwords are revealing for two reasons. First, because they are invented on the spot. Since you are focused on getting into a system, for example, your email account, you're likely to write down something that comes quickly to mind, says Petrie. In this sense, passwords tap into things that are just below the surface of consciousness. Also, to remember your password, you pick something that will stick in your mind. You may unconsciously choose something of particular emotional significance. The word or phrase that you use to open your email account may provide a key to your personality as well as to your correspondence, according to a British psychologist. Helen Petrie, professor of human-computer interaction at City University in London, analyzed the responses of 1,200 Britons who participated in a survey funded by CentralNIC, an internet domain name company. The results were published on CentralNIC's website. Petrie identifies three main password genres: Family-oriented respondents numbered nearly half of those surveyed. These people use their own name or nickname, the name of a child or partner, or a birth date as their password. They tend to be occasional computer users and have strong family ties. They chose passwords that symbolize people or events with emotional value, says Petri. One-third of respondents were fans, using the names of athletes, singers, movie stars, or sports teams. Petri says fans are young and want to ally themselves with the lifestyle represented by a celebrity. Two of the most popular names were Madonna and Homer Simpson. The third main group of participants are cryptics, because they pick unintelligible passwords or a random string of letters, numerals, and symbols. Petri says cryptics are the most security-conscious group. They tend to make the safest but least interesting choices. Passwords are revealing for two reasons. First, because they are invented on the spot. Since you are focused on getting into a system, for example, your email account, you're likely to write down something that comes quickly to mind, says Petri. In this sense, passwords tap into things that are just below the surface of consciousness. Also, to remember your password, you pick something that will stick in your mind. You may unconsciously choose something of particular emotional significance. This is the end of the listening part. Please transfer your answers to the answer sheet.